you talk about the three P's: people, performance, and productivity. Can you go in a bit more detail around your three P's and why each one of them is so important and can create a great culture and a great business?
So if we look at the first one, people, when you're trying to put together a team and when you're trying to develop and grow people, you absolutely have to understand their deep psychology, what their values and what their motivations are, and how that connects, or how does that align to that of your organization and that of your own personal values as a leader. We call it prevention and promotion focus in psychology. So promotion focus individuals are high performers, so people who are really motivated to get promoted and go the extra mile. So we'll work absolutely hard and do whatever it takes to get up to the next level. And then you've got prevention focused individuals who are more interested in understanding what's the bare minimum, or what are the four tasks that I need to do day to day to prevent something bad from happening at work.
Eleni, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am very excited to have you on today. We have wanted to do this for a little while now, but you've been very busy going off into Greece and, you know, doing lots of exciting things over there. And we're having a wonderful conversation before we jumped on. So it's great to have you on today. But before we dive in to what you do, your background, and all of the interesting topics we're going to talk about on this podcast today, can you give the audience a little bit of an introduction into who you are and what brought you here today? So over to you.
Thank you. My name is Eleni Drakakis. As you mentioned, I am a business psychologist, which is also known as an organizational or corporate psychologist. So most people know of clinical psychologists, and we are a lesser known specialty as org psychs, and we specialize in, you know, the world of work and how you can apply kind of the principles of human behavior and people's motivation so that we as individuals and as big corporations can thrive at work, and we get those lovely win-win situations where employees and teams are kind of happy and productive. And, you know, we're all able to work in a really nice, aligned, values-based way. So that's why I love the type of psychology I do and applying it to the world of work. I really get a kick out of, you know, helping people smash their goals and, you know, applying the principles of human behavior to, you know, get really positive outcomes.
Amazing. Because when we connected with you, your title of business psychologist really intrigued me. So I know that a lot of people, when they see that title, they think like, what does that involve? Like, what does that look like? You know, if you could describe what you do, because obviously we all know what a psychologist does, but a business psychologist, like you said, is it more goal orientated? Are you working with like the leaders of a business? So like, how would you describe your role in a bit more detail?
Yeah, there's absolutely, you know, lots of different ways to skin a cat or get an outcome, so to speak. But typically the usual way that clients tend to engage me is either through working with a leader or an employee one-on-one in a coaching type of capacity, or also running a group style workshop for teams or on more large scale keynotes for corporations at conferences kind of thing. So it's really tackling the people side of things, either in that one-on-one perspective, group style perspective, and also, of course, doing the advisory in the background, the strategic work as well. So they're usually probably, if that helps, at three key angles or ways that organizations and individuals tend to engage me.
Right. That's really interesting. So it actually sounds like a job and a career choice I would absolutely love, because I love strategy, I love goals, I love working with people. So, you know, maybe in 10, 20 years time, maybe I'll follow your path. But what initially got you interested in doing this? Because that's probably what I'll sort of really learn more about yourself. Like, was there a moment in your career or your upbringing that you thought, that's what I want to do, that's what I'm interested in?
Yes, absolutely. So I think as a teenager, I have two brothers, and one of my brothers has special needs. He's autistic. So I think I was exposed to psychology from a very young age and the power of kind of behavioral therapy and support. So I think that probably piqued my interest at high school to go down the psychology pathway. Then after I'd done my undergrad and my honours degree, it was time for my first job after 4 years at uni. We never actually sat in front of a client when we were learning all the wonderful theory of psychology. So I got myself a job as a social worker at a local community centre in inner city Brisbane. I was very multicultural as well, and I absolutely loved that role. I met lots of wonderful clients. I learned all about narrative therapy. I heard lots of people's stories, and we really supported individuals across the lifespan. So for a whole host of, whatever they needed assistance with in their day-to-day life. But it was also actually there that I found myself really interested in the inner workings of the organization, of the behind the scenes, how a hierarchy worked, how the management structure worked. What I now know is called the organizational culture, or the feel of the place and the values. So that's what actually set me on the path to deciding to complete my master's. So my next 2 years of study, I was originally going to go down the clinical psychology route, but it was thanks to this role and this opportunity that I really decided to pivot and go down this more corporate route. So it was probably that experience as a social worker paired with for about 10 years all the time while I was studying, I always worked in retail, and I really did love selling and consulting and talking to people. I was quite a people person, you could say. So I think I was then able to find this organizational psychology or business psychology thing that really helped me combine my two passions, right, and bring them together into one.
It's really interesting because I don't think many people would necessarily think business and psychology blended together. But actually, when you really break it down, what business is all about people, you know, because if you don't have people working together in the right way, you're never going to get the outcome that you want. So the people element is so important, and everybody comes to work as an individual with different goals, different aspirations, different beliefs, different behaviors, different backgrounds. So I guess to really get the most out of business, you need that psychological component to it. So you said something really interesting just when you were talking then. You mentioned the word feeling, which I sort of have, like, you know, when I go into certain organizations, I sense an energy or a vibe, right? So if I walk in to, say, a certain business and I go, oh, this just feels like a nice place to work. Like, people are smiling, people are chatting, versus going into other places where I go, oh, yeah, this doesn't feel quite right. Like, you must understand what I mean when I say that, right? Because I go in recruitment, you meet and you greet so many different people all the time. What do you think, talking about that organizational culture piece, what is that feeling? Have you sort of been able to identify what that is, and what creates that good feeling and energy in a business?
Yeah, it's highly intangible, isn't it? And it's not like you can just wave a magic wand and have a good culture, much to the dismay of some leaders and managers, right? It's not a band-aid job. It takes a lot of hard work and genuine care and commitment to your people and to the teams that you lead. But, you know, if you make that investment, then the commitment that you get back, the productivity, the performance, and just that positive social impact as well that you can get as a leader of a team, you know, while still making money, while still, you know, meeting all your kind of dollar value goals and commitments, you're also having fun along the way and working together, because us as humans, that's what we're built to do. From a tribal times, you know, we all work together as a tribe to get somewhere, right? It's all about how you can cooperate and work together in order to achieve that goal. Because, you know, entrepreneurs, great examples, you know, it's really hard not to burn out when you are a high-performing entrepreneur, because there's only so much that one person can do. Even with all the motivation and energy and commitment in the world, you know, like, you need to find other people around you that are passionate and committed to what you are, and be able to, you know, get them on the bus, so to speak, and all pull in that same direction together. So I don't know if I answered your question. Did I answer your question? Is there another component of it that I forgot it?
No. Look, I think that's it, isn't it? It's like, so I think what in sort of what I've experienced is that when you get people, like say, on the bus working towards a common mission, a common goal, and every single person knows their role on the bus and what they personally contribute and how they can help others, from what I've seen throughout the 10 years I've been in recruitment, that's ultimately what makes people happy, because they feel like their role has meaning, they're having impact, they're having a say in the organization. And then the business, you know, profits and gets far more from that when everybody comes to work able to do the job to the best of their ability. But at the end of the day, I guess, you know, our lives come into our work as well. So that's also a really interesting component as well. And that's why the whole, I guess, hybrid way of working is doing wonders right now for a lot of people, because I think beforehand, like you just said then, it's so challenging, especially if you're a high performer, to strike that balance of work, play, life, health, family. And I actually don't like the word balance. I think that actually if I try and create balance, I stress out even more, because I'm like, oh, I'm not out of balance. And then all of a sudden I'm like thinking, oh, how can I get back into balance? And then that causes me more stress than just going, life is going to happen. Some days I'm going to be busier, some days I'm not. So on that sort of whole point, like you mentioned one, I read one of your posts on LinkedIn. It was really, really good. You talk about the three P's: people, performance, and productivity. And I absolutely loved it, the way you sort of broke it down. So can we talk about the three Ps? Can you go in a bit more detail around your three Ps and why each one of them is so important and can create a great culture and a great business?
Yeah, I can certainly go into them. And I suppose one point I just wanted to prefix it with, when you said before, you know, how do you articulate good culture? So the way you can articulate and help develop and grow and cultivate a nice, healthy workplace culture that's got a balance of happy, motivated, and productive people is through values alignment. Okay, so I'm sure you've noticed as a recruiter going into lots of different types of organizations, or, you know, recruiting for different types of industries, that most organizations these days, they do have their values words and statements and descriptors kind of quite often, you know, really nicely written up on the position description or in the office. You'll see them on the wall in the kitchen. But I suppose what a good workplace culture is when an organization is actually able to take those words, take those values and bring them to life, right? So you can touch and feel them in terms of that vibe and that energy there. So it's really critical from a people perspective. So if we look at the first one, people, when you're recruiting people, when you're trying to put together a team and when you're trying to develop and grow people, you absolutely have to understand their deep psychology, what their values and what their motivations are, right? And how that connects, or how does that align to that of your organization and that of your own personal values as a leader? So coming back to a recruitment example, probably person and environment fit is the easiest way to explain it, right? So you've got to understand the environment, the industry, the type of team, the type of leader, what the role actually needs, and then kind of have a look at the person that you've got in front of you, knowing that there's no perfect personality and there's no perfect values and motivational mix. As you said, everyone's life outside of work and their upbringing and their own personal set of circumstances that will, you know, lead to that person as a whole. And, you know, you've got to look at what you've got to work with and how you can make that best work in a win-win scenario for that person, for the team, the division, the organizational as a whole. And that's when you get that productivity, because you get people in flow state, you get people enjoying what they're doing. And then that leads to that profitability. And the performance piece. So the dollars fall out of that. So it's all about, you know, really understanding people at that deep level and recruiting from that place of motivational and values alignment, so that you have that long-term stickability and tenure, as opposed to bum on the seat mentality, where, you know, someone can do those dot points on the position description. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you necessarily want to, or that you enjoy it. So you've got to make sure, you know, you've got to look at things a little bit more holistically. If you're really serious about curating a team and a business that's got a great culture and that you're really committed, you know, to really mentoring and guiding people as whole people, you know, not just as, you know, widgets in your team. Does that make sense? And I think COVID has been an absolute game changer for that in terms of hybrid and flex and all of that.
Can we just stay on the people bit just for a sec? Because this is so important to get right. And, you know, the cost of a bad hire and what it can do to your business, or keeping somebody in your business that you know deep down is not good for culture, is the impacts are huge. And I don't think people realize. So I'm just sort of thinking about that, some of the people that we work with, and they'll be like, okay, we really want to get this right. So when we're interviewing somebody, or when we're posting our job descriptions and we really want to align that person's values with our company values, are there any questions, any wording that can be used in a job description that businesses can use in order to see, does this person's values align with our values and our mission and vision of the future? Any advice around that piece so people can really, the business can help get that piece right?
I mean, obviously you have your non-negotiables in the role that are, you know, task and technically focused type, you know, capabilities, right? And you obviously need to include those in the position description. But what you're seeing a lot of organizations and small businesses as well doing now is really spending a lot of time, particularly at the front part of the ad, really articulating what type of business they are. So talking a little bit more about their day-to-day culture and workplace. You know, is it in the office? Is it hybrid? Are we a close-knit team? Are we an autonomous team? Whatever it may be. You often see values articulated quite at the front end of that ad. And then what I recommend is, you know, once you start getting those candidates coming through off the back of your job ad postings, you obviously have a look to see the ones that have your non-negotiables. And as long as they've got the non-negotiables, that's when I'd proceed to doing, you know, the motivational interview, as we call it. And that is a really open style of conversation that's not very structured. Where you can just, you know, give that candidate an opportunity to ask any questions they may have, but then you can ask some questions in there as well around, you know, what energizes you, what frustrates you, what type of, you know, leader do you like to work for, what type of team do you enjoy, what's an ideal work day for you. So you can ask some of those types of questions to start to understand what makes this person tick. What type of environment or situation gets them to perform in the best way? And then kind of step back and ask yourself off the back of that, can I provide that as the owner of this organization or as leader of this team in terms of the way I'm built and in terms of the capacity that I've got and in terms of the goals that we need to meet and the KPIs, am I in a position to set this person up for success and help them thrive? Is this the right place for them too? So that's something I always really encourage people to do. Take your time in a recruitment process. I'm sure you've heard it before. Hire slow and fire fast. You know, if it's not working out once someone does get in the seat, because as you said, cost of a bad hire is not just financial. It's just the impact it can have on the team's motivations and obviously the clients of the organization too.
100%. I absolutely love that. And this is where I see a lot of people go wrong. And on the flip side, from the candidate point of view as well, I always say it's your responsibility to ask questions and make sure that this business does align with what you want to achieve out of your career. It does work both ways. And don't just take a job for a pay slip. Or, you know, for example, during COVID, like there was so much money flying around in tech. It was insane. Like literally, like, you know, people with 2 years experience were just like doubling their salary overnight just because it was such a tight market. Whereas now the people that have chased the money are the ones that unfortunately in some cases have been let go because there's a couple of things that they've missed out in their career as all around sort of that sort of skill and knowledge. Those two haven't been necessarily built, right? So it's just really, really interesting. But the one thing I would say is that in early on in your career, don't chase the dollars. Go after a company where you can learn and grow on the job and make sure that you're going into an organization that can offer you that growth. I think that's so important. And I don't know about you as well, but I've been in situations where people have just kept on throwing money at me. And It wasn't about the money. It was for my value, for example, is growth, is progress. And I felt like I wasn't getting that in my current work, and I ended up leaving. But had they taken the time to really understand that about me, they probably would have ended up keeping me for a lot longer instead of just promoting me and giving me more money, but not really changing the role. So it's really, really fascinating, but it's so important to get it right from both ends. If you're interviewing and if you're the interviewer, like, make sure that, you know, the business aligns to the person, because that's how you create a great team. So important to get right. I love the first P, people. Okay, so the second P, performance. Another really, really big one. So talk to me a bit more about this, because I find this really fascinating as well.
Well, you talked before about high performers, and I think that's why I love business psychology, because I love the psychology of a high performer, right? And the psychology of a high performer is quite unique, right? Like, you know, high performers love what they do and they're willing to put in the extra mile to get the promotion and to get all, you know, all the bonuses and all the wonderful stuff that comes along with working hard and, you know, standing out and being really achievement focused. So it's, you have a totally different psychological profile and risk profile being a high performer as you do being someone who, compared with someone who's more, we call it prevention and promotion focused in psychology. So promotion focused individuals are high performers, so people who are really motivated to get promoted and go the extra mile, right? So we'll work absolutely hard and do whatever it takes to get up to the next level or to get more, whatever it is that they're striving for. And then you've got prevention-focused individuals who are more interested in understanding what's the bare minimum, or what are the, you know, the core tasks that I need to do day to day to prevent something bad from happening at work, right? Or to does that make sense? So just enough versus over the top and striving for perfection style of worker. So I think in my line of work, I'm very fortunate that I get to work with a lot of high performing individuals. But of course, when you're a high performer and when you're always seeking that strong productivity, as you mentioned, corporate burnout is a real risk. So especially at this point in time, I think after COVID and the way the market is at the moment, the way it's really, you know, the talent wars, and it's just really hard for organizations to have that full team. A lot of organizations are doing more with less. And there's a lot of pressure on individuals at the moment. And you know, that it's got to end somewhere, right? Like, you've got to look after yourself. And so I find myself talking to my clients a lot about sustained performance and how to avoid that corporate burnout when it comes to sustained productivity, because, you know, we can all kind of go into full throttle and sixth gear for a short period of time, but you can't operate at that speed forever, right? As you said, that elusive balance, you know, you've got to be able to scale back and take some times of rest and know yourself so that you can be that, you know, that really reliable individual and someone that, you know, can keep going, particularly as a leader from a resilience perspective. Quite often people get promoted and, you know, you do need more and more resilience because the stakes get even higher and higher. And it's not just your own mental health and resilience that you've got to take care of then. It's the people in your team as well. So that mental load just gets heavier the further along you go, right? So that self-awareness piece and that self-understanding and that ability to really keep yourself on that even keel and that consistency is something that becomes really important from a productivity perspective.
I can completely relate to everything you just said there on performance. And I think that one thing I've struggled with in the past is that I do have very high standards for myself across all areas of my life. And the issue I've probably had in the past as a leader is because I've had those high standards for myself, I've expected that of my team. And I am a constant work in progress with that as well, especially as it's now my business. It's like, I want my team to care as much as I care about the clients and the candidates and what we're doing and what we're delivering on. And, you know, I want to work with high performers as well. I don't want to work with people who do the bare minimum, because I find that very hard to be around. I like to be around people that are also wanting to learn and grow. It's not even about, it's just about doing the best that you can. That's all. I think as long as you're doing that, that's all that matters. But I think, yeah, where I've struggled with as in my own experience, a leader is my standards are here and I expect everybody else's to be. And that has been a constant work in progress. And I am not perfect. And I have my days where I just go, why are you doing this? Like, what's going on? It's like, so it's just, that's my area that I need to work on really hard as a leader, is to make sure that my expectations of myself don't drip into the team, and I'm making sure that they're set up for success. And that's where, again, I guess it all kind of stems back from when you come to hire, asking yourself that question, can I give this person what this person needs? And if there's somebody that needs a bit more nurturing, or somebody that needs a bit more validation or a pat on the back constantly, that then I'm not necessarily the right leader. I want someone that's a self-starter that, you know, if I say, let's do this, they're like, yeah, let's go. Right. So it's just really interesting what you said there about getting that whole, again, going back to people. And then that sort of goes on to like performance as well. But you're so right when you said about burnout, because it is a problem in our society. And I do see it with a lot of women, especially. And the one thing that I think has happened with this whole hybrid way of working, I was speaking to a female the other day. She's found that she's actually tipping more into burnout now because she's trying to juggle home life, mum life, work life, and there's not a clear distinction of a finish time because it just all kind of is blending into one. So when we talk about like just sort of in that whole performance piece, what can we do if we are feeling overwhelmed and that we could be slightly tipping into burnout? What are the warning signs and when should we pull back? And what are some of the strategies that you personally have used or encouraged others to use to sort of get over, just make sure you don't tip into that?
Yeah. So you're definitely right that, you know, burnout is real. And I do. So for example, in a few weeks' time, I'm speaking at a weekend breakfast for women all about this, the burnout and the hustle culture, and the multiple hats and the multiple priorities that, you know, we all have, male or female. Everyone has different, you know, facets to their life and well-being. And, you know, with burnout, I suppose at the end of the day, a few things, right? So obviously you have to know yourself and you have to know what your personal triggers and early warning signs are. So it does, number one, always come back to that self-awareness piece. And, you know, self-awareness for yourself and then, you know, supporting your team around developing that really healthy self-awareness of, you know, the different kind of the battery levels. You can even look at it like a mobile phone, right? You know, how do you know when you're at 30% or 50% or 70%? You know, what does that look like for you? Really energetic. You might be being really good with your meal prep when you're kind of 80, 90. You know, going and hitting the gym the number of times that you're wanting to do that, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a week. You might be thriving in your personal relationships, having time for your hobbies. You know, that might be for you when you're at your 80 or 90%. Conversely, though, it's also really important to kind of know when that's starting to creep down for you, right? And that battery life is starting to run low. So for a lot of people, we start getting a little bit more snappy, a little bit less empathetic, and just, you know, more easily frustrated and agitated, right? That's because we're just, you know, we're on that kind of, you know, yellow. We're not coming back to the green, that nice, calm headspace. We're just up there at that amber traffic light, you know, just like chronically busy, and it just doesn't take too much anymore to kind of, you know, get us up to that red zone. And once you're at that red zone and you have that emotional outburst, it can be really hard to come back from that sometimes, because quite often it's in those critical moments, you know, where we need to be calm and understanding and empathetic and, you know, use our kind of our prefrontal and our evolved part of our brain. But, you know, when we're not at our peak and when we're at risk for burnout, quite often what happens in those critical moments is that you go back to your prehistoric dinosaur brain and you do something stupid or you say something that you regret later on. You know, so it's like, as you said, what can we do to pull ourselves back from that point and catch it first? So for a lot of women, you know, how do you say no? How do you maintain healthy boundaries, particularly as you mentioned in a hybrid working context where work isn't Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 anymore from the desk. And obviously there's a whole multitude of benefits that are associated with that. But yeah, you know, we're seeing different types of workplace and corporate trainings that are coming out now to help people with things like kind of boundary management and burnout.
It's absolutely, it is really interesting. And as you were just speaking then, I was smiling because, I've definitely been in the red. We just don't show up as our best selves. And I think that the thing that my trigger is that it's, I get a bit more irritated. I'm not as patient. And patience is something I continue to work on at the best of times. And I just find myself just getting more triggered by silly things. I'm like, why are you getting so worked up about that? It doesn't happen as much as now as what it used to. I feel like I have really got these warning signs in place. So for example, like this weekend, I'd been really sort of working at, like, you know, almost getting to a point where I thought, okay, I'm tipping into maybe like a bit of overwhelm now. But this weekend we went down the Gresham Road to Lawn for a couple of days. And that just, again, sometimes it's all it takes just to kind of reframe, reset away from my phone. I find that actually getting away off technology for just, you know, a few hours or ideally longer. But for me, it was like literally about a whole day where I didn't even pick up my phone. I did lots of long walks in nature, like instantly I just remind myself of like, this is why you do what you do, to have these experiences, to come away and to enjoy life and to just to remind myself what I'm working towards and what I already have, and coming back to gratitude as opposed to like thinking about what I want to achieve and what's next. And that's just so in me. I've just got to watch it, because the balance that I found hard is the blend between the gratitude for the here and now and also having the goals and the what I'm working towards and the yin, that yang, right? It's
very
but
well.
Actually what I've also found, sorry, but I'm just like you're as you're talking, I'm like, oh my God, there's so many like thoughts. But what I've also found is you're very good at what you do, obviously. When I am in that state of gratitude, then more good stuff happens. Whereas if we're in a place of lack and like, I want this to happen, and impatience, then things feel like more of a grind and a hustle. So it's just pulling myself constantly back into harmony and peace, as opposed to just hustling and grinding and trying to force outcomes, as opposed to just being like, have patience, show up, do the right activities every day and trust that the good stuff is going to come. And that's the work. That's the constant work in progress, right? But it's really fascinating. I think, like, yeah, but burnout is something that we all need to be so aware of and talk about more, because it is so rife in our society, because it is a very hustle mindset and busy.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
So the final P that you talk about, which I absolutely love. So we've got people, performance, productivity. This is a huge one, and something that I know businesses are very big on. But how can we be our most productive, but also, again, from that whole burnout piece, make sure that it doesn't all become about productivity and not about play and creativity? Where's the balance in that?
And I think for this, I really want to link back to what you said earlier about how do you get the best out of people. You know how before you were talking about, You're not wanting those people that are just here to do the bare minimum or that aren't invested. You're wanting people to show up as the best version of themselves, right? And so that's, a lot of like the leadership programs that I run and design, you know, this is a lot of the conversation that we have. So what's the difference between being a real leader versus being a manager? Okay. So what's the difference between, when we're talking from a productivity perspective, being able to engage someone deeply from the heart and mind, it's called emotional engagement, right? As opposed to cognitive engagement. So cognitive engagement is what you can get off the back of a more traditional management relationship, right? You're the boss, you're the manager, you tell me I have to do something, and you have to tell me I have to put out 5 widgets a day for my productivity target. So that's what I'm going to do because I know I have to do it, right? But you're not really doing that from your heart, are you? You're not finding it motivating. You're not finding it engaging. And you're probably not going to stick around, you know, if that's your day-to-day, do something because I'm the boss and I'm telling you to do it, right? So that's where we've got this whole like science of leadership and this whole area of leadership development and all these speakers and, people from various walks of lives and consultants that are kind of bringing their take on how you can be an inspirational leader, right? And unlock that discretionary effort, get that extra mile, right, from the people that you're working with, get the best out of them for that sustained and that ongoing performance and that deep emotional commitment to you and your cause, you and your, whatever your outcome is, whoever your clients are that you're serving, right? Whatever line of business that you're in. And so in order to be that inspirational and that aspirational leader, you need to obviously be able to understand yourself in terms of your values, what's important to you, what you care about. But you also need to be able to understand for each person, that you lead or that you work with in a team, what is it for them that makes them tick? What is it that they care about? What's important to them? And then you've got to do what you can to make those things happen for them and help them align their day-to-day work to somehow hook into their care factor, right? So then, and that's where that alignment comes back, right? So if you've done your recruitment process properly, you've put them in a role that's aligned to people's technical skills and user experience, you've set them up in a nice like-minded or diverse team where everyone's got their own space, where you're understanding what type of leader and manager they thrive with. So a high performer, they don't need much from a manager. They need basically for the leader sometimes to get out of the way and let them go forward, right? And then just be that debrief mentor person. Whereas someone who's newer, who doesn't have that mastery, they might need those step-by-step instructions and a little bit of extra time, right? So there's the role component, there's a team component, there's a management component, and the last one is that organizational and values alignment component. We've all got to have that overall vision, mission, purpose, and it's got to have that positive social impact as well, right? We have to understand our why. You know, Simon Sinek, coming back with kind of start with the why, that's what he talks about. You know, we've all got to have that deeper purpose and that deeper commitment to each other and, you know, to the team for things to be really kind of sustainable and productive in the real sense of the word.
I love that. And I think if you get that right, you'll never need to worry about productivity, because when people know their why, what they want to achieve, how they're going to achieve it, the productivity naturally occurs. People are like, I want my team to be more productive, or I want to be more productive. It's like, well, I know for me, when I'm at my most productive is when I'm working towards something and I know where I want to go. And I know that I need to do these activities in order to get there. That's when I'm at my best and that's when I'm at my most productive. So that's really interesting. So yeah, the 3 P's for a thriving business: people, performance, productivity. I absolutely love that. You also just touched upon something really important there when you were speaking about the difference between a manager and a leader. And I think this is something that people really sort of struggle with. And what I've probably like seen happen over the years is that people have been promoted because they are a top performer, but they're not necessarily people managers or people leaders. What advice would you give for those people who've just stepped up into a leadership role And they're maybe finding it a little bit of a struggle to sort of find their flow managing people, or, you know, they're maybe not getting the respect from the team, or whenever sort of something happening, like how do you go from being a manager to a leader? What are the difference?
It's actually one of the most kind of critical steps in someone's career, that moving from a high performing kind of individual consultant or performer to the first time leadership role, right? So it is, firstly, I want to say it's absolutely normal to feel a little bit uncomfortable and a bit challenging, like you just articulated. And, you know, that's completely reasonable and rational. It's because you have to like move into a completely different skill set and learn a completely different way of working, because all of a sudden you're not achieving results and outcomes directly anymore like you were when it was me, myself, and I, right? All of a sudden, you're responsible for achieving results indirectly with and through others. So in order to do that, you have to, you know, be able to bring everyone together, understand what makes them tick, position everyone in the right place on the team so that everyone's playing to their strengths, job craft where you need to. You know, someone's sick, someone goes on holiday, a new client request comes in. You've got to be able to look at that and kind of orchestrate a solution, but quite often from behind as a leader, not the one getting in and doing it. So that might help you in the short term, but you're going to sink pretty quickly unless you learn to delegate, right? So delegation is probably the most important thing in terms of making that successful transition from individual contributor to first-time leader. And we can fall into different traps too, depending on our personalities, right? So, you know, if you know, you might be a little bit more perfectionistic or a bit more of a control freak, right? So you have a tendency to stay in the details and not always trust that others, you know, not through out of malice, but just through that drive for perfection and high performance, might be really hard to step back, right? And not micromanage other people, for example. That's one trap that people fall into sometimes. So that is it's a very interesting and a critical career juncture point, and one that, yeah, you know, a lot of people with my type of expertise, we tend to be brought in at these points in times to help people make that successful jump. And Georgie, ideally, you do want to expose people to this type of thing and understand how to lead and manage people, as opposed to, you know, in addition to your technical skill set that you should have up and running. Ideally, I love it when organizations put together 2IC programs or assistant manager type of programs, because it's really nice to learn some of the theory before you're actually thrown into the deep end of leading and managing people sometimes. So I know that that's not always possible, but it's really ideal. You know, if you're looking to set your people up for success, or, you know, someone more junior and helping to move them up so then, you know, you can move up as well. You know, preparation is really key in it, and it's understanding people when you're a manager or a leader. It's not about doing the technical work. So all of a sudden, it doesn't really matter what industry you're in, and that's why I work across all different industries. It's because it doesn't matter if it's tech or automotive or retail or whatever it is. We're all in the business of people when it comes to leadership.
We're all in the business of people when it comes to leadership. I love that, and I completely agree. And I think that it all starts with really understanding and working on yourself every single day. And I know that that's why, for me personally, it's really important to carve out some time in my mornings to set my intentions, to move, to do some meditation, to get my head in the right headspace before I go into the working day and things come at me. Because I find like if I can start my day from that grounded perspective and maybe have focused on some gratitude or something I'm proud of, or something that, you know, I'm set my intention for the day. And then as soon as if I feel myself not acting in alignment with who I want to be or who I've said I'm going to be that day, I'm instantly like able to sort of go, oh, hang on a minute. That's old Georgie. That's not the Georgie you want to be. Let's take a breath. Let's take a couple of deep breaths and remind yourself of what your intention is that day. And I found that really has helped me. And it doesn't need to be a big, long process. It can literally just be in the shower. Who do I want to be today? How would the best version of me show up today? What's the word? What energy do I want to bring into the day today? And if more people did that, I think we'd have a lot more happier people. We'd have thriving organizations, and I think we'd have a lot more kindness and generosity in the world as well, right? But it is just creating it and making it into those little daily habits. But yeah, I wish people would take a little bit more responsibility for how they show up, and especially from a leadership capacity, because I've been working underneath some amazing leaders and some not so good leaders, and the difference in my own performance has been huge. So it really does sort of also take a lot of responsibility and doing the inner work every single day if you are serious, I believe, about being a great leader.
Yes. So
that's what I've experienced anyway, and I'm still a work in progress.
We all are. We're all still a work in progress, because that's the thing, even when you figure out what makes you tick or what makes the people in your team tick, people change, and our values and what we want out of life and our goals change across the lifespan, right? You know, what you were wanting out of work when you were 19 is very different to probably what you're wanting out of work now, and in the next 10 years that it will be different again, right? And your priorities in life outside of work will be different. So, you know, that's a challenge. When we look at values, actually, it's really important to come back to your values reasonably regularly, say every 18 to 24 months, because your values do, like, some values are ingrained and they do stay the same across your whole life. But sometimes your top priorities can change, you know. So when you're younger, it's all about fun and excitement. And then, you know, maybe not so much later on in life when you have a family, for example. So, you know, it's good to come back and check in with yourself.
It's really, yeah, that's really interesting as well. I think the one value that I've always had is health. That will always be my number one, simply because I believe if you don't have your health, then nothing else matters, right? You can't be a good parent. You can't be a good leader. Like, if we all got diagnosed with something terrible tomorrow, like, we would then prioritize health. So health, I just think, is the foundation that everything else should sit on. And you know, because then you've got more energy, you can be more mobile, you know, you can be around for your kids longer, like, you can, everything, I believe, circulates around not just physical health, but mental, emotional, spiritual health. I think that's how I define health now. That's probably evolved over the years. Health used to just be about physical, but now it is more about mental and emotional and spiritual. But that's my holistic version of health. And then everything else is secondary to that. So for me, what's really easy for me now to make decisions based on, okay, well, somebody wants me to do that, but actually that conflicts with that thing that I want to do. And then I know how important that thing is for me to get my day started. So for example, I don't take meetings before 9 a.m. because my mornings are really important, because they center around health and well-being. So unless it's something absolutely vitally important, but not before 9 o'clock, you can't reach me. I'm not on my phone. I'm not on my emails. Sometimes that might even be pushed to 10 if I feel like I just need a bit more time for me in the mornings. But before 9 a.m, you won't catch me on email. You won't catch me on WhatsApp, because I'll be doing something for me to start my day off well, because health is my foundation. But it is interesting, as you were saying, about how values change, because it used to be, you said more about like fun and travel and experiences. Now actually more it's about growth and learning and developing. And that's become quite high up on my values list as well, which is interesting. But the final sort of question, I think, like, we've touched upon some incredible points today that I know a lot of people listening to this will just find really fascinating, and hopefully people are getting a lot of value from this. But with where the economy is at right now, there is a lot of uncertainty. There is a lot of, you know, people having to make some really tough decisions for their businesses, and that's having a direct impact on people's lives. And I am noticing a lot of stress, actually, if I'm honest, in the world right now, and a lot of people close to me are really feeling the pinch with the cost of living. So what advice would you give for business leaders right now for people who are struggling in this world we're living in right now? Like, what advice would you give if a business owner is struggling, or if an employee is struggling? How can we continue to make sure that we are progressing and not burning out and overwhelming ourselves during this time?
So the short answer is, I think, you know, try to put it into perspective that this is a moment in time. This isn't forever, hopefully, even though it does seem like it's a bit forever, doesn't it, off the back of COVID, and try not to panic. So that's my short answer, right? So, you know, this time too shall pass. So it's really hard, again, like it comes back to being strategic and really being considered, weighing up pros and cons, being analytic and rational in your thinking again, coming back to this prefrontal cortex, our executive functioning, you know, using our brain, our involved brain, as opposed to the panic, emotional, I'm feeling stressed, I'm feeling overloaded, I'm lacking money, do you know what I mean? And making those emotionally driven decisions. So that's my first tip. You know, number one, try not to panic and try to put ourselves back into that rational train of thought and thinking. But I do also think it's important to come back to your values and understand what's really important to you. Because, so for example, if you have overextended yourself when it comes to cost of living, or you have been used to having a certain lifestyle for a while, you know, are there areas that you can pull back on that would help you feel less panic and less stressed? Or are those things still really important for you that, you know, you're going to make some decisions, you're going to work harder or move from the organization that you like and take a role somewhere that maybe you're not so aligned to the culture, but you know, you need more money, but you've got to make these decisions in a way that's right for you, within your work-life priorities and, you know, within your partners and within your family and within your household, what's right for you. So I think that's more from an individual perspective. From a business perspective, obviously, you've got to come back to the core. You've got to come back to what are your non-negotiables, right? And what are your controllables? So there's not too much point worrying and stressing about the things that are outside of our influence or outside of our control. So that's what happens in times like now. You know, we keep hearing all this noise about high interest rates, continued inflation, you know, downturn, recession, and we're freaking out, you know, but a lot of the time we can't actually control that stuff. So, you know, it's obviously useful to a point in terms of getting the message that, okay, we can't keep being frivolous. We've got to prepare for a rainy day. But past that, do you know what I mean? Really coming back and looking what's within my circle of control, given that this is a circumstance right now, what can I do? And what's rational and what's right for me? So that's just a general commentary or a general piece. Is there any, like, is there one situation in particular that you're hearing a bit about that you'd like some advice on, or is it more just that general feeling and vibe?
No, I think that, it's always like trying to maintain perspective and remembering it's a chapter, it's not a story, and it's not making decisions in the heat of the moment as well, to be like, oh, I need to let half my workforce go. It's like, actually, like, what, before you go and make that decision, like, is there anywhere else that you could cut costs from? And just sort of trying to sort of, like, I don't know, think about it. I think there's twofold here. There's like a business owner, and then there's the employees, and it's like, how can we make sure that we just have real empathy and understanding for this time? And it is challenging. I do really think people are struggling. And, you know, like, I've got a couple of friends that have overextended themselves on a mortgage and are really struggling with those repayments. And they're having to dip into savings that was put aside for family holidays, or, you know, doing things, or, you know, borrowing money from somewhere. Like, it's tough times for a lot of people. And I think that maybe as individuals, you know, for example, then, so it's like knowing that as a friend, I'm not going to say, hey, let's go out on a Friday night to this really fancy restaurant and go and get a load of cocktails. It's like, hey, do you want to come round my house? Let's order in some takeaway and get a couple of bottles of wine. And, you know, it's just, I think we all need to show up right now with a little bit more understanding and empathy. So just as a bit of an observation there, or even if you're a business and you go, like, you know, we need to cut costs. Well, you know, explain that to your team. Like, all right, we might not be going out for dinner at this restaurant, you know, but we're going to do pizzas and, you know, beers and wine on a Friday instead of going out for dinner. Like, there's some cost cutting that we can do. I think people just, what they want is honesty and transparency.
That's it.
And I think we live in a world where we're all just sort of trying to paint a picture of that everything's perfect. And if you are struggling right now, it's like, just don't be afraid to reach out and be vulnerable and understand that there's a lot of people in your shoes. And I don't know, I just think we just all need to act with a bit of empathy during this time.
I think you're right, definitely. Because I think it can really change the outcome of things. So if you have that real conversation and that honest conversation with someone, you never know where that conversation or that outcome can take you. You might together be able to come up with an even better solution. So if you do put that out to your team and say, look, we do need to cost cut, if everyone goes away and takes some personal accountability and thinks about where they can make some little, you know, shavings and trimmings, like that might allow the whole team to stay on board, for example, as opposed to cuts being made. There might be someone else who wants to work part-time. You never know. So, like, I remember I wanted to tell you my first role after I finished master's was in a recruitment firm. It's a great experience. So I worked in the talent management kind of HR consulting side of things. And I came in just after a downturn. And a lot of the more experienced long-term people there had, they were still on a four-day work week, some of them, and others were on a nine-day fortnight. So this was before the whole, you know, working 9 days for 10 days pay, for example. So what that organization had done was ask people to step back fractionally from their full-time role so that they could, you know, keep them during that hard time but then have them there when things picked up again. So there's lots of different ways to approach problems and situations. Yes, you don't just have to go and fire half your workforce. If you don't panic, and you step back and you work together and you're honest and you're open and transparent, like you said, and you approach it with care and empathy for all and wanting to find the best solution, you may be able, you know, to come up with an even better solution and outcome that will set you up not only for now, but, you know, have your organization in a better way for the future as well. You know, learn post-traumatic growth, right, as opposed to PTSD, like actually, you know, take this challenge and this hardship. It's like, this is actually what we saw during COVID, Georgie. A lot of organizations, because of the sacrifices and that pulling together that, you know, people had to do, we actually saw organizations get more resilient and stronger off the back of COVID. That's why we saw all of that performance go up. That's why we saw that COVID correction and that peak. Because actually, pressure forms diamonds, as the saying goes sometimes. And you put people under pressure, you see the best, but you see the worst sometimes as well. But what can we do to see the best? So you're absolutely right. If we approach things calmly and from a point of empathy and care, we're open and we're honest. Yes, I agree with you. I think that's going to lead to a better outcome, or at least if you still do need to make that tough decision, you can do it in an empathetic and in a human way. And again, I think let's go back to COVID. Because we saw some great examples of empathetic leaders at that time, even when they had to make tough decisions. So say before all the government support came on board and people had to, you know, let their team go, those who did it in a nice way were more likely for those people to come back to them, you know, when the conditions changed. As opposed to, you know, if you didn't quite do it nicely, I think that the commitment and the goodwill was lost with those people and individuals.
100%. And I think that it's in these situations now where opportunities lie, opportunities to, you know, work on yourself, to be resilient, to work on the trust within your team. And I always think to myself, like when I'm going through sort of times where it's a little bit more challenging in business, like, how do I want to look back on me now? Like, what would future me be saying to me now in this moment? Like, am I proud of me now? And I think that future casting is such a powerful tool, because we've all been in those situations where we look back and go, oh God, I wish I hadn't have handled that situation that way. And it's such a horrible feeling. And I want to avoid that as much as possible. And I'm certainly not perfect. But if I'm having a moment, I go, in 5 years' time, I'm not going to care about this. Zoom out, keep perspective. This is not going to be forever. This is a moment in time. How do you want to show up during this time? What kind of leader do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to be? And just be, I want to be proud of how I showed up during tough times, not, you know, thinking, oh God, you know, that was, I was acting out of pure survival there and wasn't proud of what I said and how I handled that situation. I always want to try and look back and be proud of how I am. And I think that's a real show of mindset. It's easy to have a positive mindset when everything's going well. It's in the times of struggle and hardship that your mindset really counts. And I think that I say to myself sometimes, this is what you've trained for. This is what you've trained for. This is where all the work and the reading and the, you know, listening to the podcasts and the courses, this is where it counts. Doesn't matter when everything is all going well. This is when you utilize those skills. And I think that's what's enabled me to keep perspective when other people have lost it, which is why I love speaking to people like yourself, because I want to share these topics and have these conversations publicly, because this isn't going to last forever. And you want to look back on this time and hopefully have developed your skills and be proud of how you showed up. So for all the leaders and all everyone out there that's struggling right now, you're not alone. And remember, there is opportunity. And this is when it counts. This is when your personality and your character is formed. And who do you want to be? How do you want to show up every day?
Because I know you wrote about mindset, you know, growth mindset. So what you're talking about is having a really good, positive growth mindset, like looking at, you know, how is this an opportunity? How can I learn from this? How can I grow? Being open and flexible in your thinking, as opposed to, you know, being problem focused, trying to be more solution focused. Very good.
I love that. I love that. I could literally sit and chat to you for another hour. You and I are on the same page about a lot of things. But look, for those listening to this now that want to find out more about what you do, where can I send them? Where do you most hang out, Eleni? And yeah, is it LinkedIn? Is it some newsletter? Where can I send people?
I hang out on LinkedIn and Instagram. On Instagram, you might get a bit more behind the scenes stuff. On LinkedIn might be a little bit less frequent, more business focused. But yeah, I really love my socials. I really worked hard on building a personal brand. You know, putting a face behind the skill and the qualification and being a psychologist, you know, because everyone does things differently. So I absolutely invite you to come and engage with me on socials. Love doing podcasts, love doing speaking keynotes and public and private forums. So yeah, I think socials is probably the best place that you can keep abreast with what's going on with me. And then if you are wanting to, you know, if today does pique your interest and you're wanting to know more, absolutely do offer free introductory chats to people, so individuals and organizations. So, you know, individuals, if you're wanting that support from a career growth perspective or a leadership development perspective, or if you're at a particular transitional point in your work life and you're wanting to come back and understand your values and the elusive balance a little bit more. So from an individual perspective, and then also from a corporate perspective, if you're wanting to understand, you know, how do I keep my team engaged at this time? How can I support them during this difficult time? How can we, you know, keep each other together and accountable during this tough time? Or if you're looking for that behind the scenes strategic advice as well. So yeah, hope that answers your question.
It certainly does. Eleni, thank you so much for coming on today. You've been amazing. And I really hope everyone has enjoyed this episode today. And until next time, take care and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.